This week, we're talking about magic items and how to give them out to your players without breaking your game. Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This is the show brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon, your one-stop shop for wonderful, pristine, premium D&D dice. I never mean to say pristine, but I always say it. They are pristine. It's just not the word I go for. I go for premium, which they are that too. You can also get dice rolling trays. You can get D&D books. You can get all the little bits and extras. Head over to their website. Use the code WESPEAKCOMMON on checkout and you'll get 10% off your entire order. I had to think about it then. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. Describe, D-S-C-R-Y-B, yeah. .com, that's the website. Head over there and you can get professionally written by creative writers box text to use in your games, whether you're a DM or a player. There's over 4,500 scenes. They're adding them every week. There's maps as well that you get now by subscribing. Go and check out what's there for free. And then if you want to subscribe, you can use the code COMMON on checkout to get 10% off your subscription every month for the first 2 years. Links for both of those guys are down below in the description or up to the top or the side or wherever they are on the platform that you're listening to. And as ever, we'll talk about them at some point during the show. Today, returning for the second week in a row because of scheduling issues, it's James. How you doing, mate?
Hello, pretty good. Busy week at work, but It's nice to talk about made up things.
We were just catching up before the show and I said, like, you told me your week, I told you my week. I mean, it's a Thursday today, we're talking on release day. So there'll be another week before this goes out. But I was saying, God, listen to us being adults.
We
sound like we know what we're doing.
It's freakish. I don't like it.
No, I don't like it either. It's weird, man. It's very strange. But hey, there we go. Let's talk about made up creatures and wizards and stuff instead.
I mean, that's my preference rather than the usual stuff like Nazis and things that I have to teach about. So
I was going to say, out of context, it sounds a bit weird that you talk, especially considering the day we're recording is Holocaust Remembrance Day.
That was yesterday.
Oh, it's been all over the internet today and the news today.
And I have, you know, I organised a talk for that and it was very interesting.
Well, that is fantastic. But as we know, we're not allowed to talk about real life problems in D&D. WotC is scrubbing all of that out. So instead, let's talk about a problem that we impose on ourselves. Yeah, no, not at all. That sounds really weird out of context, doesn't it? Yeah. Not that we're advocating for genocide. Right, let's get on a lighter topic and talk about magic items. Mate, magic items are such an intrinsic part of D&D. We're going straight in today. They are so important. They make the game fun. People love them. You and I buy adventures, even if we're not going to run them, just to go through the magic items so that we can give them out to our players. But there is a fear and a stress that if you give out too many or you give out the wrong one at the wrong time, you're just going to absolutely break your game. So how do you do it, James? How do you give out magic items without breaking down?
I mean, My policy tends to just be, that sounds cool, I'll throw it out there.
That's it, that's the episode, we're done. Well done, thanks for listening.
To be honest, if you look at a magic item, and you know your players, and you know the campaign you're running, you can look at it and go, maybe I shouldn't give them that. You know, for instance, if you want to run like a Tomb of Horrors game or something, You don't just want to give them, you can all have broomsticks, because if you can fly through the middle, it just defeats the entire purpose of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So there does have to be some careful consideration there of who your players are and what it is they're doing.
Yeah, it's an annoying answer to give, because people, I've been in this position where I'm like, I just want someone to tell me exactly what to do and how to do it. And a lot of it is common sense. A lot of it is down to your own kind of thinking and working out. Know your group, and it's something I've said before, every single D&D group is different, every single group has their own dynamics, has their own way of playing, so you know them, you know whether they're going to take the piss with an item or whether they're going to you know, not use it, if it's a waste giving them something. And you also know what game you're running. So the Tomb Annihilation example is fantastic in the same way that, like, in that adventure, there is a quest, there's a side quest that will give you the ability to fly for a number of days as a reward. Ooh. Yeah. And it really helps alleviate the stress of getting your way through the jungle. So yeah. If you're giving out flying stuff all the time, you're kind of, you're ruining that quest if and when the players get to it. And in the same way that an item that you can find through the adventure as written is a decanter of endless water. No, not a decanter of endless water. It's the alchemy jug. Alchemy jug, that's it. Basically the same thing, except you can have beer and stuff, which is, if anything, is better.
I mean, you can get mayonnaise, so...
Well, yeah, exactly. Who doesn't want to just live off mayonnaise in a jungle full of undead? But the point is, you know, if you start giving out a decanter and this water, you've just ruined the fact that they might find an alchemy jug. And when you guys found the alchemy jug when we were playing TOA, it was like, oh my God, what a big thing. Like, we've had to think about water for so long, and now we've just alleviated half of the stress of that. So, yeah, a lot of it is common sense.
I think as well, like, in terms of homebrew items, they're certainly, I think anyway, a lot easier to manage than a lot of the sort of the default items, if you sort of look at it in the proper way.
Yeah, I think there's... Homebrew items are their own monster. They're their own beast because you're creating them, right? So usually you're creating them for a purpose or because you've got an idea that you really want to do. And it's, I mean, that's great. That's a lot of fun. It's a big part of why DMing is so great. They have the added thing of, oh, if you don't know how to make an item really well, or you don't know how to test an item, then you're going to end up in a situation where there's an item that's way too strong in your campaign, and you might have to go to your players and say, I need to roll this back a bit. We need to have a conversation. That's fine. Like, we do it all the time. I always say to my group, look, this item's a homebrew one, so we might have to have a chat about it at some point. We'll see how it goes. And you're all fine with that, and you will get that. And it's got to the point now where you play in my games, I play in yours. We make items all the time. We've got a pretty good hang of it now, but I can always be like, James, have a look over this and give me your opinions. And you can go, I changed this or I changed that. And I can either go, yeah, that sounds great. Or I can go, no, you're an idiot, and ignore you. And that's great. Like, it's good having that relationship. So if you're making homebrew items, you need to kind of find someone that you can send them to. Someone sent me an item over, it must say, last week? Or maybe the week, maybe 2 weeks ago, one of our listeners dropped me a message on Twitter and said, "Hey, can you have a look at this? I say item. It was more of a vehicle, and tell me what you think." It was a lovely guy called Anthony on Twitter, and it was a kind of like the Devil's Ride in Descent of Avernus.
Yeah,
so like a motorbike, but for Spelljammer.
Ooh.
A space motorbike. And I said, Anthony, can I steal this? And he said yes. So who knows, maybe it'll come up in Cosmic when we finally get around to that. Life's in the way at the moment. But I'm gonna keep pushing the release date of Cosmic Causeway 2 back. I'm just gonna be like, oh, it'll come eventually.
We'll get there.
It's like episode 52 of that Minecraft series by Yogscast. It's just never going to sound. Oh,
just that's painful. Ben,
Shadow of Israfel. That's a deep cut reference. That's a decade plus reference. Oh, I'm not salty at all. Also, I've said Anthony. It might be Anthony. I never know with that name. So, dude, correct me if I'm wrong. But you made great stuff. So, you know, find those people. There might be someone online, might be someone at your table that you can share your homebrew with. That's kind of the thing I was saying.
Yeah. As well, generally speaking, I will say, like, don't let that fear paralyze you from handing them out. Because I think it's better to hand them out and let your players have these great moments with them than to not have them at all, because there are always mitigating or actions you can take afterwards to try and deal with a too powerful item.
Well, this is the thing. I always say that you prep for your party. It's the same thing. Once your party have magic items, you put that in your prep. Like, if you know you're giving out a wand of magic missiles mid-session, bear that in mind when you're prepping your encounters for the second half of that session, because someone's going to have that and someone's going to use it. And the other thing as well is knowing that when your party gets a new item, they're going to want to go ham with it. They're going to want to use it. And allowing for that, I think, is the best thing. Like, if you are giving out beads of fireballs, make sure you've got a couple of opportunities where there's a nice compact area where there's going to be a little clump of enemies where they can drop that bead and explode the ball and feel great about it. Because once they've got that out of that, their system, then they're like, okay, this is an item that I've got. Yeah. I can use it when I need it, not just whenever, because it's fun and new. And it's the same for every single item. You know, as soon as someone gets a, what did you give Clath? A sword.
Vorpal Blade.
Yes. As soon as we play the next session with Clath, I want to get a crit and I want to decapitate someone. Like, it's going to be so much fun. It's going to feel great. Yeah. Once I've done it once or twice, it won't get old, but it'll be like, okay, cool. I've got this thing now. This is mine. Like, it's not, there's no gimmick to it now. Now it's part of my character. So make sure you've got opportunities for people to really use those items to help just balance the scales a bit when you get back into quote unquote normal play.
Yeah. And as well, with those really powerful items, they don't have to have them permanently.
Okay.
They can be either, you can either make it a, you know, this or crap version of it, a broken version, so it's only going to last them so long, or it can literally be a rental. Somebody could literally tell them, basically, something along the lines of like, look, I need you to do this job for me. Look, you're not cut out for this. This will help.
I really like the idea. I expect
it back at the end.
I really like the idea of turning up to Fantasy Costco and being like, hey, how much are rentals on those Vorpal swords back there? It's a bit awkward. Mine's broken. It's at the shop. I really need a devil's ride for the weekend. What's the rent like on that? There's a series, though. There's an NPC in there somewhere.
But I mean, you could have a rental magic item shop. There's... You know, they could have spells cast on them, which automatically recalls them after a certain amount of time. Or you can have D&D deck collectors, which...
Oh my God, D&D deck collectors. Is that not what an artificer is, though? Just someone who, like, makes rental magic items?
I suppose, yeah.
That's an amazing character. The idea is sound, and I think the if it's not a broken, like, oh, I've got a broken magic missile wand that, you know, after the last one charges out, it's gone, or it's just you have five uses. Because those items exist. That's not a new thing. There is a precedent for that in D&D. So go for it. And the other fun thing is having a magic item that's maybe not a named magic item, but maybe it's, you know, it's synonymous with someone. So, I don't know, really bad example. Give me one of Dritz's swords.
Twinkle.
Twinkle, right. I've killed you with Twinkle. It's a very fearful sounding sword. You know, maybe Dritz Stewart and says, look, I've got to go do something. I need you to deal with this. Here's Twinkle. Go use it. Deal with the problem. Come and report back. Give me Twinkle back.
Yeah.
And then you've got the fun thing of, oh, I've got this legendary amazing sword for a little bit. What the fuck happens if I lose it? And then if they lose it, it's a quest and Dritz Dwerden is pissed. And if they don't lose it, they have this fun experience of, oh, my character used Twinkle, and then they give it back, which is always fun.
Yeah, I mean, we might be looking at that in our tyranny game. Because you already know you might be able to get it.
I'm hungry for it and I can't even use it.
There's opportunities to get it, but you might not. It depends.
We've just got to fight a dragon, haven't we?
Yeah, I won't say anything more because it will spoil.
Maybe three dragons. So it's quite a powerful item.
It's at least a plus three, so you know.
Mate, I have put a gift from the literal gods in front of my players. Like, I haven't. This is the thing. So here's a great example of putting a magic item in your game, and this is half homebrew that could be disgustingly powerful, right? So TOA, you're in the jungles, you have a paladin in your group who is a follower of Tyr. yeah, you know about this. This is one of the items that I sent to you to look at.
Yeah.
And Ray, who has been on the show before, has is this player. And Ray, don't worry, you can. There won't be any spoilers here. This is fine. I won't talk about what the hammer does. He and I have a great player DM relationship, as I do with all my players, I think, where, you know, they can say, here are some wishes, here are some stars like that I want, and I can go, okay, cool, leave it with me, you know, obviously no promises, but I'll try and fulfill some of your power fantasies and mix them into the story and stuff. And one of the things he said to me was, Tyr's got some really cool weapons, I'd love to, like, at some point wield a weapon of Tyr. And so I went off and I did some research and I found Tyr's Warhammer. And this thing is, like, it's powerful. If you go to, I'm actually going to grab it here, but if you go to, like, the Faerun Wiki, which is one of its own, like, it's a beast of its own nature. It has a page on it and it's got all these different abilities. And it's one of those places where it will tell you every single thing it has ever been able to do. And as with anything, it's had different abilities across the years. And so if you just take it as it's written, it looks like it can do fucking everything and more. So things like the way it looks, what kind of hammer it is, the names for it, and then its powers. And like, oh, you know, it's, In the original D&D, it's a +5 Warhammer, and I'm like, well, that doesn't exist in 5e. How do I translate this across? So I ended up making this weapon, you know, this magic item, this artifact. You know, it's not just a magic item; it's an artifact. And putting it in front of you, James, and saying, "Give me your opinions," and you give me some feedback. And
yeah,
now it's in the game, and it's within touching distance, quite literally. And you've seen it be used by an NPC, and it's like, why does the NPC have it? Like, what's going on? I've been getting messages from my god, like, should I take it? Should I get in a fight? Like, it's all a bit awkward. I don't know what to do. But the outcome that I am prepared for is that this item ends up in the hands of my players. So I have to think about that. And this is an artifact. This is a weapon of the gods. This isn't a magic missile wand like we've joked about. This isn't a paper bird. This is a thing, you know? This is a proper thing. This is a MacGuffin. So how do I combat that? Well, do I have it be an item that grows in power over time? Do I give it once a day usage? Do I tone it down compared to what the legends say and put a story beat in about how, oh, you're not actually a god, so you can't do all the things that it can do, or you're not the rightful owner, you've just got it on loan. It's not what I've gone for, Ray. Don't worry. It will be amazing. But you have to think about that. And that's just making a mess in the studio. That's the stuff I have to think about. And I've put a lot of thought into how that is going to play if/when Wolfgang has the hammer in his hands, even to the point of, like, canonically, it has a turn undead feature. Undeader heavily featured within this campaign. You've just got to do some forward planning and really think about it.
I mean, like, I'm always a fan of that growing in power as you go on kind of thing. Because that feels nice then as well for the player as they unlock new stuff for it. So it doesn't just become, oh, that old hammer I picked up a few sessions back. Instead it's, oh, it does this new thing now. It makes it a lot more fun and a lot more interesting for them. And you know, I'm going to use example of that spear I gave out, which could be recalled to the hand. Originally, then I wanted that to be able to dismiss into like a little demiplane, a bit like the hex blade thing, and it's a bit powerful straight away. So for now, we'll just have it like it could be called back on a bonus action once, and that's it. We never got much further because, of course, the player died, but...
The character died.
Yes, the character died. Not
the player. The player's alive and well. Yes.
So, yeah, the growing in power thing is always good.
Well, this is the thing, and I've raved about this before, and he has told me he will come on the show, and I will get him on the show when I've got my life in order. And by that, I mean my routine sorted. But Heavy Arms, Handbook to the Armourer's Handbook, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I always forget the... fucking name. I rave about the book so many times.
It's so good. DM's
Guild. But that is a that's a book that's not about magic items. It's about making, I was going to say mundane, but they're not really mundane, but like normal items better and weapons. Yeah. So the whole ethos is that when you're in a D&D adventure, if you're finding magic items, you know, suddenly like, oh, this sword is naff now, I'm going to take this plus one sword, and then you have that for a bit and you go, oh wow, this plus two axe that can summon undead is even better, I'll get rid of this plus two sword, and you just forget about it. And it's kind of like, it's a bit kind of weird. Yeah. It's weird.
You don't really build an attachment.
Exactly, especially when we build characters as storytellers who have like a sword in, from their backstory. You know, it, this was my dad's blade, but I'm going to leave it here in this cave because there's a plus three sword here and I can't carry both because of my encumbrance. Like, it's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. So what the what Heavy Arms has done with this book is they've made a system where you can level up and make swords, hammers, axes, whatever, better over time. You can put tags on them and you can make them a little bit magical and they become something special. And that's giving that sense of attachment. That's giving that sense of meaningful stuff. It's making weapons important right. to your character. Yeah, something like that. English is hard. It's fine. It's only my first language. And I love that. And that you should do that with magic items. And that's what items that level up do. And now that Wild Mount is out and Matt Mercer is doing it and it's in Fizzburns, it's going to be more common in people's games. The exalted, you know, vestiges of divergence, that kind of thing. That's going to be much more normal now. But people were doing it for years before. It's definitely a go-to technique.
Yeah, they can always be really cool story beats as well, them unlocking those new abilities. So, you know, that spear, for example, was going to require some either pretty significant deed or sacrifice to unlock its next sort of level kind of thing, which can then help further on your character development as well.
Let's talk about oversaturating the party with magic items, because I've done that and I think I've done it successfully. So I want to turn back the clock to Dragon Heist.
Oh.
And we played level 5 to level 8 and we played it for, what, like a year? Year and a half?
Yeah.
It was a long campaign.
About the same length as Descent.
Yeah. But in a good way.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're up against Manshoon, the Xanathar, the Cassalanthas, Jarlaxle, who's got 5 magic items on himself at all times. You're up against, you know, you're brushing shoulders with Lyriel Silverhand, a literal child of Mistra, the Black Staff, and Kelbin within the Black Staff, like all of these important big characters. And you're in the capital of the Sword Coast. You're in Waterdeep. You're gonna come, you know, Volo's there and
all this
fun stuff. Magic is everywhere. It's very high magic, very high fantasy. And it got to the point where you guys are tier 2. You're doing big stuff. You killed Manshoon and he's got a Archmage cloak and he's got a Staff of the Magi. And it was a Staff of the Magi? Staff of Power. That's the one. Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't give you a Staff of the Magi. You know, you've got Joe's character, Kauri, who's making items. He's a bit of a tinkerer. You've got a druid. You've got a wizard. You know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it got to the point where at the end of that, not the end, but, you know, the closing arc, we were at the end and I knew that these characters were going to be put into semi-retirement. They're going to go on hiatus for a bit. I knew that our final session was Joe was like 2 days before he moved. Like it had to be a big send off. I knew it was going to be a big fight with Xanathar and you guys were coming up with plans for how you were going to do it for like 2 or 3 months before
and
it happened.
Rich.
You were fucking minted. You had hundreds of thousands of gold coins and more. And so, you know, and you had Manshoon's spellbook. Like, you know, money wasn't a problem. And you had bribery and connections. Like, basically, it was very hard for me to say no. And I was in a position where I was like, okay, well, fuck it. Let's do it. Let's give it everything.
I think what's important to note there is, well, like, we earned it.
Oh, you know,
Don't be afraid to make players work for that powerful shit.
Oh, yeah. So you had Manshoon's spellbook. You had a Staff of Power. Phoebe had a dancing sword. Joe had...
I had bought it in the Staff of Power then.
Yeah, I know, I know. Joe had a couple of rings, some elven boots and a cloak. I can't remember what Cassie had. I don't know what... Everyone had something.
Yeah.
Wes had a few things. What else did you have?
So I've got +2 Arcane Grimoire.
Of course.
A Cloak of Protection, mm-hmm. a Stone of Galore. That was just the ones that were more attunement.
Yeah.
You know, I've got some pretty fucking powerful spell scrolls. I've got an elemental yellow diamond gem.
Oh, yeah, gem that summons an elemental.
Yeah. Potions of flying, potion of heroism, all good stuff.
Orlo still has his potion of heroism.
I think Kira has his as well because I've not taken it off his sheet.
But that Stone of Elemental, didn't you use that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, Brom summoned an Elemental, didn't he?
Yeah, I was thinking of using it, but never did.
The point is, they all had at least 6 items, right? And, like, good shit. And I had to think about how I was going to balance this. So a few things went into it. And this is something to think about, especially in the end game with magic items. I was like, okay, it's a boss fight, so let's deal with the boss. Let's give him some extra HP. Let's look at what the Xanatha can do. Let's come up with some tactics. Let's put in some fun little scenarios. I built the encounter around the party. That was the first thing I did. Second thing I did, the reason I got to this point was I was like, okay, well, big send off. Their characters are gonna retire. They're not gonna retire. We will revisit these characters. It is gonna happen. I have plans, but they're going on hiatus for at least 4 years. Like, it's going to be a long time. You know, we're into, what, 2 years now already? So we're like halfway there.
Yeah.
So let's give them a load of stuff. Let's set them up to be players within the world as NPCs and like fucking let them have their fun. So I just gave them everything. They were like, oh, can I have this? I was like, yeah, sure. And Joe actually said to me when I saw him last over the winter, he said to me, I don't know how you did it. It's like every time you were like, let's kill this villain, you were like, okay. And I was like, oh, let's come up with this fun idea. You were like, yep, fine, I don't care. I'm sure I've got everything planned. And I was like, mate, thank you. I appreciate that.
So that was the fun thing about that Xanatha fight was it felt like two titans like smashing into each other, which if you play as a decked out in magic items, it should feel like two titans, you know, just bashing
there
away.
There is... a piece of art from the MTG crossover with Magic last year of the Xanatha fighting some players. And that's what I imagine that fight looking like.
Yeah.
But because it was the end of the campaign, because it was a send-off, because the characters were getting retired, semi-retired, I just went for it. And then I just planned around that. If that was mid-campaign, if those characters were going to continue on to 9th, 10th, you know, whatever and on... I would probably have to really think about it because now I'd be in a situation where you have a Staff of Power, you have an Arcane Grimoire, you have all these potions, you've got all this money, everybody's decked the fuck out. It's like, how do I combat that? And I think the answer is you kind of don't, or you just kind of roll with it. You have to go the ways.
Yeah.
And you have to accept at that point, your campaign and your gameplay is going to enter a very fantastical realm. So I think if you found yourself in a position where your party's decked out with magical items and you don't want to take them away because that's not fun. And if you do take stuff away from your players, they have to be able to get them back at some point. There has to be a reason. Unless they're just idiots and they lose them. Like, that's different. But you can't actively take items away without very, very good reason. You just have to accept that you need to really plan around them now. Those have become keystones of your characters. They're key abilities now. Your wizard has... God knows how many extra spells that they can cast in a day without using spell slots. That's just something you've got to deal with. You need to think about counterspell more often now.
I think as well, like thinking about magic items and in relation to wizards, like as wizards get higher level, a lot of the shit magic items can do, wizards can just do.
This is true.
So, you know, for instance, you know, Wall of Force, that is as a spell, like that can absolutely ruin an encounter if you're not ready for it. You know, I'm thinking about our tyranny game. I'm ready for it because I know Orlo has it and I'm like,
Yeah.
I know how to deal with Wall of Force.
It's something that I really struggle with is knowing what my player characters can do as a DM because I've got so much to think about as a DM and I spend more time DMing than I do as a player, I don't know. I've never played a monk. I don't know what the monks do. You know, like, I mean, I do, but not intricately.
Reminds me of when Wesley played Swashbuckler and he was just like, yeah, I can do that. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So it's like, are you sure? Yes, Ben, I've built this character. I know I can do it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to check that. Okay. But can you show me the page? Can you reference it, please? Oxford referencing. So, you know, I really struggle with that. But once you've played with them for a little bit, like, once you've played with the characters in that party for a while, you get an idea of what they do and how they do it, because each build is different, each character is different. Then you get to the point where you start giving the magic items. Now, if you're giving an item, you need to know what it does, obviously.
Yeah.
And you start to realize the things that they do. But the other thing is as well, like, you don't know if your players are going to like them. Like, you could give out, and it's happened to me, you could give out a really cool item, you think, and you think, okay, I'm going to have to really plan around this, but, you know, it's cool and they've earned it, here it is. And the players never use it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the other thing as well is, like, even looking at all of the different magic items, even one that you look at and you think, what's that? It's just a bit of dust of dryness. You never know how creative your players are going to get with that. And that's part of the fun of magic items, is how they end up being creatively used, even if it does kind of whiff an encounter, as it were.
Yeah. It's, I feel like this topic is a really tricky one, in the sense that, like, you don't want to just say, oh, you plan around it, think about it. You want to give some real active tips, but it can be tricky to think of every given scenario, especially with those higher magic items. Let's talk about advice for actively giving out items then, because I go with, at the start of the campaign, my kind of thought is, I'll give out a little one here. Like, the first magic item is always fun. Like, I'll think of something unique that the character party haven't had and it's not too impactful. I'll pop that in here. And then maybe fight an enemy who has a +1 sword, you know, and so when you kill them, it's like, oh my God, we got a +1 sword. It's stuff like that. It's when I get to probably mid-second tier that I start looking at the character sheets and I go, oh, I've given out some items. Like, you guys have stuff. You guys are, like, talking about how many achievement slots you have now, especially if you've got an artificer in the group.
Yeah.
I mean, look at our group in Tyranny. We had that conversation last session. It was, who's got achievement slot? And I was like, well, I can only attune to one more thing. So, you know, and it's like, where have all these items come from? It's at that point when I think the struggle comes in, and my tactic is to analyze. I feel like I'm saying the same thing again. Analyze what they're doing and then plan around my story beats. But I don't know. I mean, you tell me, do you do this? Because I feel like this might be my style of DMing, because I plan around the story. In my brain, like with Dragon Heist, I was like, yeah, okay, they've killed Manshun and he had a staff of power. Balance-wise, it's going to be really difficult now for me to deal with that, but story-wise, it's really fucking cool, so I'm going to plan a story beat later on about, like, how to deal with that and what the repercussions of you having that item are. Like, maybe now the Black Staff is like, you can't be walking around the city with something that powerful. That's too much hassle for me. I need you to, like, rein it in a bit or do a quest so that you can have it.
Yeah, I think the story should always come first. In terms of giving those items out or players having them, you know, they shouldn't subsume the whole story. I think that's generally what I think.
Okay.
But a more specific tip for when you're handing out them items, I think a good thing to do is not give out ones that just cover a player's weaknesses. The best ones to give are ones that I think enhance what's already strong about them.
Okay, give me an example.
So, you know, if, let's take Kimura, you know.
Kimura's a barbarian.
Yeah, and realistically, if you guys get Aegis Fang, Kimura's going to be the one wielding it, because it's Aegis Fang, it's made for a massive barbarian. No one else is going to be using that.
Yeah, and for reference, Aegis Fang is a giant war axe that belonged to... Hammer, sorry. But we got hard on for hammers today, apparently. that belonged to...
Wulfgar.
What's his name? Wulfgar.
And it was manufactured by Brunnor Battlehammer.
Yes, so we're talking legendary artifact within the Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, and, you know, Kimura's going to get that. You know, it's not going to be a permanent item she's going to get, but at the same time, I'm not then giving Kimura something which will then get rid of a barbarian's usual weaknesses. Like, you know, she's going to be something that will allow her to evade, like, wisdom or intelligence saves, that kind of thing. It's leaning into those strengths and letting that player feel powerful in what their character wants to feel powerful in, but also still making it so there's costs and risks when they're doing things.
There's almost a difference between that playstyle of I want to have even stats across the board and be okay at everything, or I want to be very hyper-focused and really good at this one thing.
Yeah.
And if I'm not good at something else, that's fine. Me as a player, and I'm the same in all kind of RPGs, I've always been a bit like, oh, I don't want to have a negative stat. I'm going to raise that to the detriment of having a lower somewhere else, which makes me okay at everything and good at one thing rather than really good at two things and shit at something else. So when you're giving out magic items, look at the type of player you're giving it to and go, okay, well, you're playing a wizard who really likes to cast spells. So an arcane grimoire is going to make you really good at maintaining and getting off those spells because your spell save DC is going to be higher and your spell attack bonus is going to be higher. So I'm going to give you that. But if you look at a player who's a wizard who, like me, also likes to be useful in other ways, for example, Orlo can through... And this isn't a magic item, but it could be a magic item.
Yeah.
His mage hand is his own. It's different. It's his own spell. And he can wield a sword with it. And so when he's using his sword, he can add his intelligence modifier rather than his strength. Because he's not very good at strength. And that means that when I run out of spells, I can do that cool Gandalf thing of having a sword and a staff. You know, and that's something that I like. I like that he's a bit of an all-rounder and he's a bit of a different wizard, even if he's not... like hyper focused at that one thing that he should be amazing at. He's good at cards, he's good at being a wizard, don't get me wrong, but he's also got this little bit of flavor, and that could be a spell, you know, that could be a magic item rather than a spell. It could be, oh, you've got an item that allows you to do XYZ that you wouldn't normally do. But the point I think that you're making, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you focus the item on the player and how they play, you're gonna less so have more issues because you're just leaning into their playstyle that you're already DMing for?
Essentially, yeah. You're letting them feel really, really good in getting what they want. And so that's good for them, and it's good for you because you like people enjoying your game, and you're not presenting yourself with an issue, a new issue.
Yeah, because if you are running an undead campaign and the paladin is constantly doing turn undead and you give them an ability that lets them turn undead one time extra, like, that's not going to change your life. That's not going to change how you prep. That's not giving you something else to think about. Yeah. It's just making you go, oh yeah, they can do it more times now, so I need to think about that.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, especially with like things like that, it's like you never know exactly when they're going to use it. You might think, oh, they'll use that in this account, and then they just don't.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Do you know what is the closest equivalent of getting given a magic item in the real world?
Is it Dice Dungeon Dice, Ben?
It's being getting given a brand new set of beautiful dice from the Dice Dungeon. I like that you picked up what I was putting down there. Well done. Yes, the Dice Dungeon are wonderful, wonderful people. Ben and Dave have been long time supporters of We Speak Common, and We Speak Common has been long time supporters of theirs and of Dice Dungeon. And they are very excitedly just announced that they pulled together a little bit of a partnership and have worked with the Longest Johns. I don't know if you know who the Longest Johns are, James.
Nope.
I'm a big fan of the Longest Johns. So do you remember when the Wellerman was trending?
Yes.
The song? Yeah, that song. Yeah, you know it. How does it go?
I don't want to sing.
yeah, you know, the shanty. That's them. That's the Longest Johns. That's their song. And yeah, so they've got some people in high places. They know friends. So I'm still waiting for my signed copy of their album from Ben and Dave. Set it up, please. But they're highbrow. I mean, if it's good enough for some singers, it's good enough for you and me. If you want some lovely, beautiful dice, I highly suggest going over to the website. It's in the description of this episode. You can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON to get yourself 10% off your entire order. So everything you put in your basket, get 10% off, get yourself some nice shiny dice, and make it feel like you're rolling with that +3 when you're playing D&D. Oh, I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. I can make a rhyme and in real short time. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe, spelled DSCRYB.com. Now, Describe are an incredible service of professional creative writers who will write box text for your games. It's for describing places, monsters, spells. If you are someone who casts spells and you don't know how to describe them as a player, they're there for you too, as well as the DM. But one of their sections, if you are going to be giving out items, is the items section. So if you head over there into that collection, there's a bunch of free items, and by bunch I mean like loads, so many. But there's so many more for members only. If you want to go and check it out, then go and have a look, dscryb.com. there's a link in the description below. James, give me an item, any item.
Hammer of Thunderbolts.
Hammer, is that a real item?
I could picture it in my head, but it's probably not. The Robes of the Archmagi instead.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I've searched Hammer of Thunderbolts, and one of the things that's come up is the I Throw My Hammer of Thunderbolts, which is the player version of the box text. I'm going to read that to you. From my gauntleted hand, with the power of the belt behind it, the hammer flies. It leaves my hand like a great hound eager to run, an arrow from the string, and covers the distance on a flat line. Its connection booms with the barbaric force of a deadly storm over an open field. Almost an eighth of a mile it's hit with the thunder and the concussive force that attends it. So there you go. Go and check out Describe, DSCRYB.com. Have a look at all the free scenes and get access to thousands, literally, of other scenes by subscribing. 10% off every month for the first 2 years if you use the code COMMON at checkout. Boom! There you go. Hammer of Thunderbolts. Love it. That was my auditory version of a Hammer of Thunderbolts going off. It just goes just boom.
Somebody shouting boom very loudly.
Boom! That's, if we ever get a Hammer of Thunderbolts, that's how I'm going to describe it. Now, there you go. Yeah, done.
It's just all out, just goes boom.
Boom! Boom! It's really not intimidating. Okay, so we've talked about pre-made items. We've talked about homebrew items. We've talked about giving them out. What do you do when you find yourself in a position where A, there's just too many items, or B, the items are just too strong, and maybe you've made an item, you've given it out and you misjudged it, it happens. Maybe you've given an item from the book out and you've gone, oh, maybe my level 5 party shouldn't have a Wand of Orcus. That's probably, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Every party should have a Wand of Orcus, Ben.
I'm still waiting for mine, James. I need that.
It's in the works.
The Eye of Vecna. What else do I need? I could do with the Book of Vard Darkness. That'd be helpful. Yeah.
Hand of Vecna.
Well, once I've got those three, I'm going to go and get the hand off Archon.
And then maybe the Head of Vecna.
I'm not a fool. You can't trick me. I will take the left pinky toe, though, if that's going.
Sure, why not?
There's a theme there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Very, very worrying theme. I tell me what you think. I think the hardest thing here always is that you have to have that conversation with your players. And I hate doing this. And luckily, I haven't had to do it too much because I'm a good DM. sorry, that was disgusting. You have to go to your players and say, look, I've made a mistake, or I need to edit something.
Yeah.
This isn't quite working. Can we have a conversation? And if you've got a good relationship with your players, that conversation should be okay. It's daunting, but it should be okay.
I mean, to be honest, whenever I have made custom magic items, I've made a fair few, I literally always go, here is your item, and I go, but
yes.
if it's too strong, then you know something might have to change. At the same time, if you feel it's a bit crap and you're not using it, let me know and we can work on making it better as well.
Well, this is something that we touched on at the start of the episode, and it's not something that you can do with pre-made magic items because, you know, they're kind of just, that's them, that's how they work. Like, we all know how a Vorpal sword works.
Yeah.
Unless you take it and add to it, at which point it becomes a homebrew item. And that is to say, here's your item, and with every item I give out, I say, just be wary, you know, we might, if it gets to a point, have to have a conversation about some slight changes, because this is the first time this item is coming into the game. But that's really nice what you say about adding in the thing of, yeah, if it's not meeting your fantasy, let me know. And I think that's really important, especially when a player comes to you and says, hey, I've got this character build idea, but I really want this unique item. Can you build something for me? And then you've got the pressure of like it meeting their expectations.
Oh, that's those are the items I love building though.
Mm. Because it's kind of like a challenge. It's like, hey, I wanted to be able to do this but not break the game.
Yeah, so I've done that literally for both of Cassie's characters.
Yeah.
You know, current one has the gambler's the gambler's gloves, and the other one had the spear of Lafander. That was fun.
My advice, I mean, we're moving on to making items here then giving them out, but I guess it's kind of hand in hand. My advice is to just think, would I see this in a 5e book? Because most of the time, a lot of the items in the 5e books are, I was going to say underwhelming. They're not, but
there are quite a few underwhelming items, I think.
There are quite a few, but there are also ones that aren't. But they have drawbacks. Like, there's no item that is just pure good. And I think if you make an item and you go, is this too powerful? Just think, would I see this in a published book? Would I see this? Would this pass WotC's stress test? Which, you know, a lot of people will be like, well, they don't test everything, so unbalanced. And okay, maybe. But my view of the way WotC makes stuff is they go, oh, that's a bit powerful. Let's make it not powerful so that it won't break anything. So if you go in with that kind of mentality, you'll look at the item, you'll make it, and you'll go, either that's too powerful, like I need to pull it back a bit, or you'll go, huh, that's underwhelming, I need to add to it.
Yeah.
And you'll know where the line is. Like, you'll find that zone of, this is about right. But I tend to go, okay, it's a really, really strong item, I need to give it some sort of drawback, or I need to give it some sort of maybe a minor detrimental
property
effect,
yeah,
or something like that, or like I need to rein it in by giving it some uses. Like, I'm trying to think of a really good example of something I've made, but it's been a while. Like, when someone says, oh, if I go, James, I want an item that allows me to cast or do this effect that a cleric can do, I don't know, James, I really want a turn undead feature, and you go, okay,
yeah,
fine, but you've got a cleric in the party who can do that. If I give that to you just to be able to do it whenever you want, like, that's a bit shit, and it's very strong. You can do it once a day. Here's your amulet of turn undead.
Yeah.
But it's like you've given it that barrier.
Yeah. When we did the level 20 campaign, that never finished. I made like that Brontium's bow for like Joe's character, who could shoot like fucking 15 arrows in a turn. And did, yes, like, you know, he did like over fucking 400 damage in a single turn or something stupid like that. Like, I think that came with extra abilities which were dragon inspired, and they were like once, three times a day type of thing, depending on what they are.
Mm.
And if you're ever not sure if an ability is too powerful, just whack a limit on the number of times you can use it.
Yeah. It sounds like a band-aid, like a plaster, but it's good. It's a good use.
Charges as well.
charges are amazing, and think about it. Like, look at, my advice is to look at some items that you've seen in games that you like and look at how they do it. So, you know, how many charges does this item have that I really like? Or how many per uses a day does this item have? What's the spell save DC on this item? And what rarity is it? And as ever, it wouldn't be an episode of We Speak Common without me saying read the DMG, because there are chapters on making magic items that you can follow if you're really starting fresh out too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Well,
have we hit the nail? Have we done it? Is that the episode?
I don't know if we did too many. If you've got too many magic items, there's just too many of them floating around, just give your players a chance to get rid of them.
How would you do that?
If, you know, if they're visiting like somewhere like Waterdeep or somewhere like that, you know, there are people there who will want to buy items. They could even come across people who go, hey, oh, you've got this thing, I'd really like that thing. And then maybe they could exchange, or even better, and I just come up with the top of my head, you could put a story beat in for an old item you perhaps know they don't use anymore, and it can be one of the solutions to the problem. So say our alchemy jug.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, we're finishing Chult, whoever it is goes off and having enough water is never a problem again for them. But then at some point, you know, they're going through a desert or whatever, and they come across, you know, they're only there for like a day or so, they're traveling through, but they come across a village where they're really struggling with water. It could just be a nice story beat for them to pass that on to help a group or something like that.
I like that. I like that a lot. I when you said that, I thought, would I ever want to give away items as a player though? And I think if you're feeling that way about your group, I'd just say make it meaningful, make it worthy. Like, if they're selling, it's got to be either a really high price tag or they're trading for something that they've always wanted.
Yeah.
And then if you're going for that story beat mode, then maybe it's like, okay, find something that really ties into their character to make it worthwhile. Like, have they got a tribe that could really do with the item from their backstory? Like, something like that that's going to stick with them forever.
And we can always do what we did with Ullo, and is allow combination and crafting of items.
Yes. I had an item that allowed me via charges to
Staff of Defense.
Staff of Defense.
From Lost Mines, and a Ring of Protection, which is plus one AC.
Yeah. And I said, hey, James, Orlo needs some more magic item achievement slots. Can I spend time, money, spell slots a day for X many days? We came up with a system to craft a new item. And I think the rundown was we made the Arcanist Araman's Ring of Defense, and it's a ring that gives you a plus one to your AC. It gives you five charges. It costs one charge to cast mage armor and two charges to cast shield, which is like a third of what the Staff of Defense could do, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, we combined the items at the cost of, they're not as good, but they still do what I wanted. And it's like a staple of his character now. I never have to worry about shield shield sometimes, but I never have to worry about mage armor ever again. It's amazing.
I think that's one of my favorite items we've kind of finagled out.
And we did that together. It was a teamwork thing, which is, do that, absolutely work with your players.
Yeah.
Because then you can also do that thing of, I get a cool idea, but you're fucking me a bit here, James. Like, I've got to think about giving you guys a bit of a challenge. You can't be good at everything.
Yeah.
And you can have that kind of back and forth and have a bit of fun with it.
Oh.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I feel like we've either talked around the issue or we've hit it bang on the head. I don't know. I guess we'll find out when I listen back.
Combination of two. Maybe we probably veered off a few times as usual, jumped back on it and then veered back off again.
It's always the way. Hey, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, this is cool, I'd love to see a magic item that you guys have made, then hey, I've got something for you. There was an episode a few weeks ago, I think 3 or 4 episodes back, Phoebe jumped on and we created the Crown of Tiny Dragons. I sat her down and I said, Phoebe, come up with an idea. Don't tell me about it. And we'll make it on the episode. Well, that item Oh, go on, James.
It's a very nice item because I've just sent it to me and I've
you're looking at it now, aren't you?
Yes, I'm looking at it now, Ben.
The Crown Tiny Dragons, if you want to hear all about it, there's three versions of it. Go and listen to that episode. But if you are a Patreon supporter of this podcast, you can grab it right now off Patreon. It is yours. You can put it in your game. You can use it. You can have fun with it. I already know one of our Patreons is planning on having the three versions, one metallic, one chromatic, one gem version, to be like the seals that break open the door that's holding Tiamat at bay. So that's a really cool idea. Have a look. If you want to support the podcast, Patreon is the place to go. You can come and join us in our online community, our Discord community, where stuff like that gets made and talked about and we chat and hang out all the time. You can guest on the show, all that good stuff. Patreon is the place to go, and it's the best way to support the show. If you don't want to do that, because hey, free internet content, I get it, then just share it with all the D&D people you know
and come show us your magic items.
Don't solicit the listeners to show us their magic items, James. That's creepy. Oh, you dragon, you. I do think you might actually be a gold dragon.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, of course not. I can see that light shining off your metallic wings. Thank you for joining me. This has been a lot of fun.
It has indeed.
And thanks for jumping in, because my schedule changed last minute. Appreciate that. 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. I think my schedule's just about coped with it in the end.
Yeah. I'll give you a bit of a break now, I promise.
I'm happy to come by whenever.
Fantastic. And I'll book you for next week, right after this call. Mate, thank you very much. Have a great evening. We got some D&D later.
We have.
Looking forward to that. So we'll have some fun. Yeah, I need to get home. I'm still in the studio at work. Thanks, buddy.
See ya.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, do us a favour and share us with a friend or a D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support We Speak Common, you can by heading to the links in the description, either on this episode or via our social medias to find our Patreon. It's the best way to directly support the production of more shows like the one you listened to today. You can connect with the show on Twitter and Instagram at We Speak Common. The music in the episode is Street Dancing by Timecrawler82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.